when my daughter was about 6 or 7 and she did something very 6 or 7, I was very dysregulated. I was having all the feels, and she did something that broke something in me, in my head. And I let loose upon her a torrent of yelling and screaming and diminishing, and the, just everything that was wrong came pouring out at her. And I had one of those moments where you sort of lift out of your own body and you're having this out of body surreal experience where the logical part of your brain is going, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I have to change this. I am going to be the reason my kid needs therapy. I hit the internet and it was actually shockingly difficult to find resources explaining, why is it like this? Does it have to be like this? Is this the only way? Once I sort of picked a pathway, I realized I want more resources. I want to create the resource I wish I'd had when I figured that out.
Is your child's challenging behavior leaving you feeling exhausted, defeated, and hopeless? You are not alone. And I want you to know you are not a failure and your child is not broken. Welcome to Calm the Chaos Parenting, the podcast for parents raising strong-willed, highly sensitive, or neurodivergent children. I'm Dana Abraham, parenting expert, and I have helped hundreds of thousands of families just like yours. Each week, I'll share simple science-backed solutions to help you feel more grounded, in tune, and deeply connected to your child, no matter what challenge you face. Start your journey from surviving to thriving as a family at calmthechaospodcast.com.
Hey, 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 guys. Welcome back to the Calm the Chaos Parenting Podcast. If you have ever wondered what the heck this whole parenting thing is, or if you're doing it right or doing it wrong, or if you're going to screw up your kids, you're in the right place today. I have got the most amazing person here to chat about all things parenting upside down and right side up. And so I am super excited to welcome Gwenna. Hi, Gwenna. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. How are you?
I am so excited. I have been fangirling just a little bit waiting for this chat. So super excited to have this. And I know that you've got so much to offer and share with us today. So before we dive in, you've got this brand new book, which I was like putting all these little post-it notes, Mama Cusses, which is also the name of, I think, like your TikTok channel and all your socials. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit about who you are and like why you do what you do?
I became a parent in 2007. There's a question mark on the end of it because I'm pretty sure that's the year she was born. But at this point, that was a real long time ago.
My kids' birthdays.
I know the day of the year, but the year is a little bit of a question mark. I'm in within like a 3-year bubble. It was 2007, 2008, 2009, somewhere in there. It's because the first year is just a fog. It doesn't really count as time.
I can get behind that. I have a 2005 and a 2007, but I forget their day because I am the second. One of my kids is the second and one of them is the first, but I can't tell you which one.
So I became a parent in 2007, probably. And there were a lot of things happening. I talk about it in the book of where I was, what was happening, stuff that if you'd asked me prior to 2007, when do you think's the right time to have kids? I'd have been like the 17th of never. Like I was one of those. And folks last week, how'd you know you were ready to have kids? The pregnancy test came back positive. That's when I knew. I was very much in survival mode for the first few years of my kid's life. And survival mode is where you don't really have brain power. You're literally thriving can come later. You're really just trying to check off the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. That's all you've got in you. Did you end the day with the same number of living creatures that you started with? Great. Excellent. That's bare minimum.
And it's even okay if you can't find them.
Right.
At least they're still living. We're good.
I'm mostly sure the cat's probably outside. I don't know. She'll howl at the window when she wants back in. She's supposed to be outside. No, but that's where she is. And I'm not working any harder to fix the situation right now. But I had a moment when my daughter was about 6 or 7 and she did something very 6 or 7. I was very dysregulated. I was having all the feels and she did something that broke something in me, in my head. And I let loose upon her a torrent of yelling and screaming and diminishing and the just everything that was wrong came pouring out at her. And I had one of those moments where you sort of lift out of your own body and you're having this out of body surreal experience where the logical part of your brain is going, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I have to change this. I am going to be the reason my kid needs therapy. Oh, crap. And so I hit the internet and it was actually shockingly difficult to find resources explaining, why is it like this? Does it have to be like this? Is this the only way? Once I sort of picked a pathway, I realized I want more resources. I want to create the resource I wish I'd had when I figured that out. And it started on writing essays and blogs, and then it moved over to social media. And now it's back in writing, but this time in the form of a book. Mama Cuss is a field guide to responsive parenting and trying not to be the reason your kids need therapy. That's the title is the reason.
I always tell people, our kids are still going to need therapy.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I'm just going to own it because then it takes the pressure off of me. I'm like, yeah. I could be the best parent in the world and my kids are probably still going to need therapy.
Oh no, we all need therapy. Yeah. I absolutely come from the camp that we all need therapy. My goal here is not to be the reason my kids need therapy.
Oh, I totally hear you. I'm bringing all that stuff that we bring with it to the table. Mm-hmm. What I love about your work is the remove of the shame and the guilt and the blame that is just like entrenched in the information out there for parents, especially if you are a new parent and you're just Googling and it's like, what will the Google gods give me today based on the algorithm or whatever? And you end up getting, this is a picture perfect family. Mm-hmm. This is how it should. I always say it's like best case scenarios is what you're handed. Yeah. Instead of this is what really is happening behind closed doors. And I love that you share what's really happening behind closed doors.
I try to be, obviously, my kids and my family are entitled to some level of privacy, but I try to be realistically optimistic, meaning, no, you're not getting my very, very worst moments because I don't want to make you feel like, oh, this is a thing that I can do with no work on because everyone is like this. No. I absolutely have flaws and things that I'm working on. And I tend to tell you about it after I've sort of post-mortemed that interesting parenting choice I made. So I want you to know I've done the work and I'm better or getting better, but this was still a really hard thing for me to navigate because either I didn't have an example or the only example I had, which is way more common among my readers, they only have the example of what not to do. So you've got a really solid target of, well, not this. This is not the solution. But what is the solution? not that. That's all I got for you. I don't want it to be like that. That didn't work for me. So I try to be realistic.
I think that you do a great job of being realistic. And obviously with, you know, how many followers on TikTok now?
3.6 or so, 3.6 million. So
maybe connecting with a few parents out there. Maybe a few moms are like, yeah, I get this.
It makes sense to me.
What I love about how your book is designed as an ADHDer myself, I love that the end of every single chapter has a TLDR. So I love that. That's actually, if I'm being super honest, I did not read the whole book. I just went and read all the TLDRs. Oh, like as many as I could.
And see, that's absolutely valid. I designed this book to be a reference of sorts. And so if you've got a gist of what each chapter is about, some chapters may not apply to you for a couple different reasons. First, it's not a challenge that's inherent in your life. That's just something that you never struggled with. Okay, skip that chapter. You don't need that chapter. There may be times when you're like, I am not there yet because I still have a flesh-wrapped sentient meatloaf. I'm nowhere near that portion of parenting. I don't have to worry about navigating interpersonal relationships. My kid's still fascinated by its own foot. Okay, great. That chapter will apply someday, but not now. Yeah, read the too long didn't read. And when you encounter that, hopefully there's a little seed lodged in your brain of, wait, I have information at my fingertips. Where do I find it? Oh yeah, Mama Cusses. And then you don't have to scroll through my insane social media catalog. Pop quiz. Did you read chapter 9?
Hold on.
Did you read it? It's called The Big Feels Loop-De-Loo.
I did not read that full chapter, but I read. Yeah. But what I did mark is the parent timeout. I really liked that one. Mm-hmm. that's about where I was stopped. I was like started skimming because I was running out of time using an ADHD. And so I was trying to read an entire like 300 pages of book in 15 minutes. Right. I do recommend this book though, from the bits that I've read and what I do know about you, Gwenna. I do think anyone listening to this, I think it's going to fit really well with the stuff that we talk about here and especially the survival mode pieces. And you don't just talk about just best case scenario. You talk about the science and you talk about why you've made the choices you've made and how that's helped you. And I like that.
One of the things that I think is really important is, first of all, I've said nothing new. I did not say anything new that's not readily available by the science or by other parenting writers or by other parenting communicators. Nothing in this book is groundbreaking. However, I still maintain it's really important because if someone had gotten all of it right, we wouldn't still be here. We wouldn't still be doing what we're doing. And so if how I've said something is the first way it makes sense to you, excellent. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing that I tried really hard to do is recognize that there's no such thing as a parenting expert. And there's no one way to raise a kid. And I say this constantly. Will this work for every family? No, but it works for ours. Mm-hmm. And I think the Calm the Chaos crowd is quite aware of most of what the experts will recommend is geared toward those average making children. So those children that are right in the center of the norms. That's not a critique, but for those of us with kids that are outside those norms, it feels like there is no resource. There is no one way to do things. You're right. There is no one way to do things. I have twins. And at the time that my twins were born, the internet was losing their minds at something called prop feeding. That's where you lay them down and you put a towel or a rag or a boppy across them and you prop the bottle so it stays at an incline and they can eat. And to be fair, that can be a very dangerous practice, especially with a little one, because you think, oh, well, I'm definitely going to stay awake. You are exhausted and running off an inhuman amount of sleep. There is a danger, but when you're outnumbered by your own spawn at the same time, sometimes you have to do what is necessary because I cannot safely feed one baby while the other is convinced that it's starving. It's not, but my primal maternal instincts inside are going, it's mad, fix this. So yeah, no, we definitely prop fed. And we'd switch out. One baby would get held and fed and the other would be prop fed. And then the next feeding we'd switch. Baby B would be held and baby A had to be prop fed. Was it ideal? No. Would that work for every family? No. But it's what we had to do.
I think that's what you cover well is those nuances. Mm-hmm. I think those nuances get left out a lot of the word that's been coming to me a lot lately is mainstream, the mainstream advice. This is what we should all do. We should not watch electronics. We should not let our kids be on screens. All these things. Okay, that's a big sweeping statement. And so what I like is this, here's what I learned as I was going through this. Here's what I know to be true. And here's the caveat sometimes. Let's get into a few of those, if you don't mind. Let's talk about some of the big mindset shifts first. Mm-hmm. What are some of the biggest misconceptions, the biggest mindset shifts that you found that almost get in the way of parents being able to access information that can be helpful to them? And I know you talk a lot about the difference between gentle parenting and responsive parenting, being one of them. But yeah, let's talk about a few of those big mindset shifts.
I think the first is labels. Mm-hmm. If a label doesn't feel right to you, that doesn't necessarily mean that the parenting style is wrong for you. I do not like the term gentle parenting, but that is exactly what I practice. Gentle is the wrong word because you are always met with gentle parenting is for gentle children. Wrong. No. Gentle parenting will result in gentle adults. But by the time you have a gentle adult, congrats, you did it. You made it. You all survived and you're pretty cool. No. Parenting starts with you. We're not calling it childing. We're calling it parenting. So getting over the labels is important. Labels are absolutely used to center yourself and to find a direction to travel. But it doesn't mean that it is the all-defining term. It comes down to the difference of I have autism or I am autistic. Everyone's got a different take on what that means and how they identify and how it applies to them. So I am a gentle parent. I am a responsive parent. I'm saying the same thing, but I'm identifying differently. I'm applying it to myself like armor in a way that suits my body.
I find that that is something that I don't find a lot of people talking about. I 100% agree. I feel like the labels of a parenting style is actually getting in the way of parents being able to learn more about it and learn more about their kid. And how do I show up? And how do I not be so triggered? And how do I not yell so much? And how do I accept the kid I have in front of me? Mm-hmm. I don't want to be a permissive parent. It's like, none of this is about being permissive. You wouldn't be even trying to read a book if you were completely permissive. Right. That's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about feral children. Just all be clear. And so I love that you talk about this, because I feel like even now, in just the last couple of months, I've seen an uptick of these like arguments around, is it gentle parenting? Is it firm parenting? Is it the sturdy parent? What are we going to call it?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you guys are missing the boat here. Yeah. Let's just talk about parenting and showing up for our kids.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think the other barrier is really being able to take a good introspective look. Introspection is hard. It is frightening. There are people who legitimately require the paid services of a trained professional to be able to break into themselves. So I do not say this lightly. I do not say this as if, oh, well, if you haven't been introspective, how are you? No, I understand completely that it is hard to look inside yourself. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of times that people will be like, my kid's rude. Wait, what did you say? My kid's rude. Okay, that's it. What is rude? My kid's manipulative. I hear that one a lot.
Stop.
Let's discuss manipulation. I'm not saying you're wrong. You very much feel like your kid is manipulative. But let's look at this from some science and some feelings part. Science says they don't have enough brain function to be manipulative most of the time. And yes, every single time someone's always going to come up with, well, there is this one case. Okay, yes, there is always going to be the violations of the norms. But on the whole, even your neurodivergent kid is not being manipulative. They lack the capacity to manipulate. Now, that doesn't mean that you just have to accept the behavior. You can set boundaries, you can set goals, and you can take steps to shift that behavior from what you feel is manipulative to something that's far more communicative, that's far more empathetic. You can do that. It might take time. And honestly, in some cases, it may involve professional services. It may involve early intervention. Doesn't mean that you're failing, but it does start with you. So you look at the terms. Are you feeling triggered by your kid, or is your kid triggering you? Oh, that's an important distinction. You are feeling triggered by your kid. And while that's not okay, it is normal. So now you get to take an opportunity and sit with yourself. You have to be introspective. What about this behavior is such a struggle for me?
Absolutely.
So you got to start with yourself.
Yeah.
And that's, 100%. It's so hard. It's so hard. It's honestly, I think it's a little easier when you are fully aware that you are working against generational trauma. When you've identified that what came before is not what you want to be, that makes it super easy to go, no, not that. I don't know what to do, but it's not that. It's when you haven't quite noticed, I am the way that I am because of XYZ. I need to take a look at that, because that X is playing a really heavy role and needs to nod.
Dana here. And guess what? My book, Calm the Chaos, has officially launched. So if you enjoy the podcast and find the stuff we're sharing valuable, I'm 100% sure you're going to love the book. You can get your copy at calmthechaosbook.com. And if you use this link, you'll also get some special bonuses. So once again, the link is calmthechaosbook.com. Thanks. I hope you're enjoying the show.
Talk to me about some of the, you talked about the feelings chapter mm-hmm. 9, the big loop-de feelings. Big feels loop-de-loo. Can you share a little bit about that? Obviously, people should get the book and learn more about it, but can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, let me find the image here in the book.
There was a big wheel, and then there was another one. There were two big...
Well, there's one that's called the feelings wheel. There it is.
Yes.
Okay, so this is just for reference. So the big feels... Yeah,
and then the big loopy loop, this one, right? Yeah.
So this is what I call a roller coaster. It's not linear. I call it the loop-de-loo because it does cycle back around to itself. But there are 4.5 little steps to it. And that's recognition. So giving the big feeling a proper and specific name. And I have something called a feelings wheel. And if you've never used a feelings wheel, you should immediately find, discover, familiarize yourself with, and print it out, because that gives us the opportunity to, are you happy? Are you mad? Are you sad? Oh, you're sad? Okay. Are you depressed? Are you anxious? Are you scared? You can really drill down. What are you feeling? Okay. Because what you're feeling changes what we do with it and how we move forward. So we recognize what it is. We regulate. That is not the same as suppressing. I want you to feel your feel. If we're mad, if we're frustrated, which is something you're going to encounter a lot from the ages of two, frustration is heavy. You're frustrated.
Have you not hit teens yet? How old are yours?
My oldest is 17.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because you're going to get some big feels there too.
There are big feels, but the frustration is far lessened, okay. I feel, as they get older, because they're able to parse out. They have a lot more tools in their toolbox to communicate. Yes, frustration is a daily part of life as an adult. That frustration being the stop point. Frustration is step one, and then they get bigger. They get more specific. I think early elementary and lower, the frustration is so grinding because they lack the communication skills, or they lack the empathy, or they lack something important in being able to move past frustrated. So we get to frustrated and we have this big blow up over it.
And I think for people listening, just apply this to, it doesn't matter the age, right?
It really doesn't matter the age.
Where they are when it comes to communicating and recognizing those feelings. Because if you have a neurodivergent kiddo who struggles with ADHD, anxiety, autism, they might not still have the language for feeling the feels and the frustration. And this feelings wheel is still going to help you, because it's going to help you narrow down. Because I always tell people that age 3 to 5, they've got happy, sad, mad, glad. That's what they've got. And they don't really know what else to use outside of that. And this feelings wheel is going to help a ton with helping you recognize and also them recognize.
Yes. So. Yeah. Parenting starts with you being able to identify, oh, this is what annoyed looks like in you. Got it. We recently had an occurrence at the dinner table where my son did something accidentally. We have these plates that if you hit them just right, they pick up off of the edge of the table and they'll fling the food. Every single one of us at the dinner table has done this before. My son just never had, apparently. So he goes to shift himself. His hand hits the plate, peas everywhere. And he got really wiggly and he started making these weird sounds. I was like, buddy, are you embarrassed a little bit? He goes, no. Oh, okay. And then he keeps acting like super fidgety. I was like, buddy, do you know what embarrassed means? He goes, no. Okay. What you're feeling now is embarrassed and it is okay. I was like, oh, wait, I don't think he's 5. I don't think he knows what embarrassed means.
That makes sense.
But that was an ability. So learning how to deal with your emotions is a learned skill. We're not born knowing how to do that. Look at any infant ever. They have two modes of communication, giggle and scream. That's it. And if it's little, it doesn't even have giggle yet. That function's not online. So here's the thing is when they are not in a tantrum, when they are not in an elevated space, they may have all the words. But chemically, things start happening in our brains when we start getting a little amped, when we start getting a little concerned, when we're in the bad feels of the feeling wheel, and we lose language, we lose the ability to listen, we lose the ability to remember. A lot of things happen on the biophysical level of our brain when we get amped up. And when you add neurodiversity, where those connectors are not as expected, it gets so much more confusing, because inside there is this, I have ADHD, my husband is autistic. Inside there is this perfectly logical, sane voice going, you're frustrated, take a deep breath, take a drink of water and quit. But the rest of my brain's like, I hear you. I understand. No, I reject this. I'm going to keep.
I've had those moments more times than maybe I care to admit.
But once we identify what that feeling is, now we get to find ways to regulate. And that is a completely individual experience. In the back of my book, I have something called the co-regulation appendix. It is designed as co-regulations, but every single co-regulation eventually can shift to a regulation. So a co-regulation is, I'm going to hold your hand. I'm going to give you the step-by-step. My favorite regulation is called cookie your candle. And all it is a gamified breathing exercise. Okay. So breathing has a lot of physical benefits to calming our adrenaline-soaked brains down. So I'll hold my hand flat and go, would you like to smell my cookie? And I offer them like I'm handing them a cookie to smell. or would you like to blow out my candle? And I hold up my index finger like it's a candle. And no matter what they choose, the option, the response is going to be the same. Would you like to smell my candle? They're going to deep breath in through their mouth. Or I'm sorry, they're going to deep breath in through their nose and probably exhale through their mouth. The candle is going to be something different. They're going to deep breath in through their mouth and then blow it out. So now I'm forcing you to take really good deep breaths. A friend of mine, Tori Phantom, goes, would you like a drink of water? Because in order to take a drink of water, you have to take a deep breath in. You have to take, and then you have to blow that air out. Like, that's just, there's certain ways we can trick ourselves into taking good deep, I think the certain communities call them cleansing breaths, but I really want that diaphragm, that bit of us that makes our lungs go up and down. I really want that engaged. I want as much air in your lungs as possible, because now we're starting to lower our heart rate. We're starting to let that adrenaline leach off of our gray matter and get absorbed back where it belongs instead of getting us all amped up. So those regulations, and there's a ton of them in the book. And there's a ton more that I didn't even describe. Essentially, anything that will take you from a neutral state to a good mood is most likely to take you from a rough state to a neutral mood. When you're introducing things like neurodivergencies, that process can sometimes take longer. And you are going to be told way faster than with a neurotypical kid that this is not a regulation that's going to work. I don't like this one. No. So there are times that I'm like, give them some deep pressure. If you've got a sensory avoidant kids, deep pressure is probably not a place you start. You can experiment with it, especially if they're like offline. That's when they're not elevated. We're not working toward a meltdown. And I'm here removing meltdowns as I don't know. None of my kids are neurodivergent. There's a question mark on one of them, but none of my kids are neurodivergent. So meltdowns, I understand, are something completely different. I'm talking about tantrums. I'm talking about that space where they do still have some clarity and some step down left. Once you get into meltdown territory, we're talking a different language. We're speaking of a different thing.
And here we talk about how there's obviously, again, this comes down to that languaging that can be a barrier between accessing what we're talking about. And so I like to just remind people that a tantrum is still not in control. They're still struggling. Right. They still need help. They still need us to be responsive and understand what they're going through, just like a meltdown. And yes, they are two very different things, but everything you're talking about is supportive of if a child is in a sensory shutdown, is in overwhelm, you're just probably going to do a whole lot less of it.
Yeah.
As you're just holding space for them while they're.
So after regulation comes reasoning. I don't think I use that exact word, but after we've regulated, now we can talk about the problem. Okay. So what got you there? We were talking about sweaters and then you were a crying puddle on the floor. I don't think this was about sweaters. This was something different. And a lot of times, for all types of kids, a lot of times what they are crying about is often not what's making them mad.
100%. I always say it's not about the banana oatmeal, because you always get like some sort of big meltdown or blow up in the morning over breakfast, whether it's pancakes or it's oatmeal or it's the cereal, it's something. Yeah. But it's not ever about that thing. It's always about something else.
It's almost always about something
almost
else.
Almost always. Yes. Let's be
so honest. we have a meltdown over the sweater. So what was that about? Was that about the sweater? Did you want to wear something else? No, I want to wear the sweater. Okay. So then why are we mad? Because I wanted to pick the sweater. Oh, this is a fit about your autonomy. I stepped on that this time, didn't I? Oh, dude, yeah. I'm sorry. I walked in and said, put the sweater on, and I didn't give you the choice. And you are very used to me. Do you want to wear this sweater or this sweater? We were in a hurry, and I took away your choice. And the critics out there will be like, oh my God, your kid threw a temper tantrum because they didn't get to make a choice. Yeah, so do you every time. You mean to tell me you have not walked into a store and they said the credit card machine is down and you didn't have any cash. And so now you can't get your snacky snack and you didn't throw a temper tantrum on the inside. You lie. You did. We all do. We might be empathetic enough to not make it the clerk's problem. The clerk is having a bad day already because the credit card machine is down. But I'm still pissed that I didn't get my snack. I wanted my Hershey bar, but no, I don't have cash. We all do it. But we have the practice at recognizing this frustration is not going to be made better by expressing it the person who just had to deliver the bad news. So I'm going to work on this on the inside. I'm going to regulate myself. And yeah, that regulation may look like yelling at my steering wheel when I get in the car. but I'm going to get it out of my system. And then I'm going to go to the next gas station. I'm going to get my frigging snack. Kids are doing that same thing, but they don't have that prefrontal cortex that goes, now is not the time. This is not the way. So that feeling of frustration just pours out of them. So we do the same thing. We're just more selective about it. And then we look at kids who are just people who aren't good at being people yet and go, why'd he throw a fit about the sweater? Because, Susan, I took away his choice. He gets to be mad at that. And now we get to discuss, hey, buddy, did those tears help or hurt the situation? Yeah, they didn't help anybody understand what was going on. Yeah, those were big tears for a little problem. Okay, now we can work on the scale. Now we can work on, was that an appropriate reaction? Mm-hmm. Did that feeling help us solve the problem or did it get in the way? Okay, so next time we feel frustrated, we know to, yeah, take a deep breath, shake it out, something, whatever regulation method helps your next time you're feeling frustrated, yeah, shake it out. Yeah, turn on those stims, get it out. Okay, this is going to help us in a couple different ways. If I see those hand flaps going and I know that this is tied to your frustration, oh, buddy, what you getting frustrated about? Now I've got a visual cue to help walk you through you feeling some feels. And now I'm reinforcing all of those neural pathways in your little brain going, you're frustrated. Okay. I see you. It's okay that you're frustrated. Deep breath. Okay. Oh, the flaps are going down. Okay, good. What you frustrated about? Can I help or do you need to do this? All of that is helping solidify them doing it without my help. It'll take some time. It'll take a lot of time.
What do you say to all the critics who say, well, when they have a job or when they're an adult, they're going to have to deal with frustration. They can't yell at their boss. Mm-hmm. What would you say to them?
Yeah, absolutely. And if my five-year-old has to get a job, I have strong questions about what's going on. Because my five-year-old doesn't have to get a job. My five-year-old is currently spending their fifth year learning what to do about frustration. And in their sixth year, we might practice what to do about our frustration and talk about our anger. And then in our seventh year, we'll be pretty good about frustration and working on our anger. And now we get to get annoyed. Now we figure out what to do about annoyed. And if we're continuing to teach them how to be people, by the time they're 25 and they get an asshole like you for a boss, they'll know exactly how to handle you.
I love it. Thank you. And you'd have a great response. That's hard. Did we get through the wheel of loop-de-loops?
I think we got most of the way. There's one more.
What's the half step?
It's cooperation.
Oh, okay.
And the reason I say that is a half step is because sometimes there's no other parties involved. If we've got sister who took a doll and we dove off the deep end with that emotional reaction, we got to work that loop-de-loo. And once we get all the way through the regulation and the feelings and the talking and the solution making, now we got to go back to sister and wrap her into that solution. Because a lot of times, while yes, one kid may have had the bigger reaction, I've got twins. So the number of times I have to get onto both kids for separate things. Okay, buddy, she said you cannot read her book. That is her boundary to set. That is her book to read. And she does not want to share it with you. That is her choice. You need to back off, give her space, and respect the words that she just said. Respect her boundary. Sister Sue, why are you hogging the book? Huh? Why can't your brother read the book? Tell me what it is that you think he's going to hurt it because he's hurt your other books before. So it's this back and forth of I've got two separate parenting issues happening at the same time. And that's where that cooperation happens, mm-hmm. is that, okay, you've got a really valid point. He's pretty rough on books and you like to protect them. Dude, you've got to fix this and you need to leave her alone because she said no. And that counts, even if you think it's an unfair no.
And then you're going to force them to apologize to each other, right?
No, absolutely not.
Oh, come on, Gwenna. I thought we were on the same page here. Just kidding.
No, absolutely not. Now, I will gently remind them, hey, do you think you hurt Bubba's feelings when you said that he couldn't read your book? Yeah. And what makes you feel better when someone has hurt your feelings? A hug and maybe a sorry. I might have to remind them, hey, apologies are a thing. Would you like to do that? That is super common. Would you like to apologize to your Bubba? And occasionally I get a no. Can you tell me why you don't want to apologize to him? Because, sometimes they give a super valid reason. And sometimes I'm like, oh, because you're in your feels. He doesn't get an apology because you're still having a feel about this. Okay, then let's talk about that feel. And I'm still probably going to get them to the point that they willingly apologize to each other. And then sometimes she said, say sorry. No, she shouldn't, buddy. She set a boundary. She communicated that boundary calmly. And when you refused to respect her boundary, she came to get a grown up. She didn't do anything wrong. Yeah, no, I see that it's unfair that you didn't get to read the book, but I don't know. I don't. Sometimes we just get to be disappointed.
I love how you walk through the conversation and talking this out with them. And it's so fun. And this is why so many people follow you. And the book has all the same humor in it. We could talk all day. Yeah. I could ask you so many questions. But guys, just go get the book. It's that easy. Just head on over, which the book, it's got something special. Instead of just this tuck sensation now, what's going to cover that, Gwenna?
I am now a New York Times and USA Today bestseller.
As so exciting when we got on earlier. I was like, I'm so proud of you. I was like, wait, I'm not your parent. That sounds weird.
We need to normalize being proud of each other and platonic I love yous. Yeah. You're allowed to say I love you to friends. It's not fully a romantic thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I am proud of you, buddy.
Thank you.
I'm proud of you. Even if we just met, I am proud of you. Yeah. So it's just, I love that this type of book hit New York Times bestseller, allows parents to, because to me, when I wrote the book, it was like, oh, I don't care if I get New York Times bestseller, except that that means that lots of people read the book. Mm-hmm. And if lots of people read this book, Mama Cusses, they read your book, that means that they don't feel alone. They don't feel like they're failing. They don't feel like they're all out there trying to navigate all the things they shouldn't do, but they don't have the opposite of what can they do instead. Right. And so I think... You know, thank you. Thank you for putting your work out there. And thank you for putting it into a book where parents can access it easily.
Well, I appreciate coming on the podcast. It has been fantastic. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Well, I have one last question I like to ask all of my guests. And that is, if you were sitting in front of a mama who is a lot like you were when you had just had that big yell at your kid and you were like, I got to figure something else out. And you're sitting in front of them right now and you only have a minute or two to tell them the one thing that you need them to hear before they walk away, what would you want them to hear?
The fact that you're sitting here talking to me, questioning everything that you've been doing, everything you can do, everything you haven't done, and everything you might do, means you're already a good parent. Bad parents never wonder if they're doing a good job. Good parents never stop thinking they're doing a bad one. So you've done the hardest thing just by questioning it. Now you just got to find the answers, which seems hard, but I promise you already did the hard part. Mm.
I love that. That is so amazing. Where can people find out more about you, get your book, all those beautiful things?
So you can find me pretty much everywhere on social media, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. I am Mama Cusses. On YouTube, I am Pleasant Peasant Media. You can buy my book anywhere you buy your favorite titles. Please consider supporting your local owned and independent bookstores. If you do not have one near you, I highly recommend buying from bookshop.org. This is not a paid testimonial, but every purchase from bookshop.org supports a local and independent bookstore.
I love it. Thank you so much. And friends, as you're listening to this and you're heading out on your day, I just want you to know, just like Gwenna said, you've already done the hard part. You're here listening, you're asking the questions, and that means you are already exactly the parent that your child needs. And you do not have to do this alone. I will see each and every one of you, or listen to each and every one of you, on next week's podcast episode. See you later, guys.
Oh, and before I go, one quick note for all of you who are enjoying the podcast. My new book is officially live, and I know you're going to love it. So just a quick reminder, you can go get your copy at calmthechaosbook.com. And if you do, you'll get some cool bonuses as well. Once again, get your copy at calmthechaosbook.com, and I'll see you next week.